All right, we're on. I'm recording.
You are? Hey, we are. When have we had a backdrop for a podcast like that?
That's incredible. There is the tram going up the mountain right now. We're in Squaw.
We are in Squaw. See you in Squaw. Hashtag is today. It is Friday before the start of Western States 100 2018. We just finished the pre-race meeting and met all the elite runners, and that room was packed. We did some heat training, actually.
Yes, we did.
And I tell you what, there is some electricity in the air, isn't there, guys?
I was just talking to a runner about that more than any other race, this race has like a two-day, three-day pre-electric sense in the air. It's palpable.
Yeah, you really can feel it.
There's a lot of special things about ultra running, but when it comes to Western States, there's an energy, kind of a vortex. It just pulls you in, and it comes from stepping into this village with all the vendors and all the hopefuls and all the, finally, we're going to get in and get this thing started. We learned in December we're in the race, and now we're here.
Anticipation, probably more anticipation for this race than I would argue any other in the world.
And we've got some good competition. AJW is going to lend some of his expertise, and Sally will join us, and I understand she's on her way. So we'll start with the men.
She's doing some fartleks.
But let's let's get some of the business out of the way. Let's do a couple of ads, and then let's get going on this thing.
Let's talk about one of our newer partners, Path Projects. We received an email that was copied. We're not going to mention names because we didn't get permission. But this person was saying how they had heard about Path Projects from the Trail Runner Nation podcast and how we kind of hyped it up. And he said it was worth every bit of the hype. He tried them on, and they were amazing. Right, Andy?
Oh, my goodness. I got a couple pairs of their shorts and some of their tops, and it is first-rate stuff. And especially, and it seems so obvious, but this underwear.
The baseliner.
The baseliner with then the shorts that don't have the liner in. It's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He can't think of running in another short.
It is. They're amazing. What were you going to say, Freeman?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything because I really don't know what to say, and so I'll just pass the baton. Where do they go to get them?
Well, before that, I need to say that we have some exciting news, breaking news.
Yeah.
They're coming out with some new gear.
Okay.
And in fact, we have some. We've been told that they're in the mail. They're a shorter version of the shorts. I think the ones we have are the 5-inch inseam. They have a 3-inch inseam. So if you like to show a little more leg like Don does,
yeah.
These are the shorts for you.
Where do they go to get them, Scott?
They go a couple different places. They can go to pathprojects.com, or they can go to our partners page, and there's a banner there. Just click on that, and you'll link on over.
Next up, who else are we doing next?
I think we should talk about Lakey.
Lakey
Poles. We're sitting in some Lakey chairs right now. I didn't know they made chairs.
Well, when you experiment building the best pole in the world, you have extra parts at the end.
you need to use the other poles that you use to experiment with.
Yeah, those are the experimental beta testing type. They made a chair out of them, and it works fantastic.
So you can use the trekking poles during the race, and then when you're done, you can sit in their chairs.
Absolutely. Love Lakey Pole. 20% off is the deal for Trail Runner Nation members. They can get that by going to our partners page and clicking on over. That's the only thing I know about that. And finally, Scott,
Tailwind Nutrition. Tailwind awesome. Nutrition was, I think, our first partner with Trail Runner Nation. They've been with us this whole time, and they just continue to get bigger and bigger.
In fact, AJW, a race director himself, had that on his course. Why did you do that, AJW?
Absolutely. Well, all the runners just spoke about the flavors, the diversity of flavors, the different. Yeah, they could always find one that they liked. It seemed like the strength was just the right amount, not too sweet, not too tart. It seems like those folks at Tailwind just nailed it right from the start, and then they just continue to nail it. Love that stuff.
It's not going to do you any good unless you can drink it. So they made
that's
it
right.
So that it's savory, good flavors, so you want to drink it. And that's one of the beauties of that.
Well, let's get into this thing. Western States 2018 edition, as tradition has it, we do a prediction.
Before we do that, I'd like to talk about the other character of Western States, and that is the course. We learned at the pre-race meeting just now that there's been some changes. I want to talk about those changes. I also want to talk about the climate, the weather this year. And let's talk and see a little bit about that.
Well, that was my exact next line, Scott.
Is that so, what you, yeah. So I took your line?
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Is it going to be hot this year, number one?
I tweeted just moments ago one of the things that blew my mind. This race, first of all, how many volunteers are there?
1,700
for 360 runners. Right. That's unprecedented.
Wait, that doesn't even account the crew that's out here, because everybody brings, most people bring some crew. So these are 1,700 volunteers
that are wearing Western States
shirts. Those are the official volunteers. Yeah. Then there's everybody else who's just here in support.
And there's
an incredible number of people.
But in that magnitude, I just tweeted, it's going to be hot. We know that. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But they have already ordered 65 pounds of ice for each runner.
Per runner. That's
per
the way
runner.
It averages. Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah, they start out with 65 pounds on their back by the time they get to Auburn. hopefully they're not carrying as much. So we're hoping
I don't
heat.
Know if you've ever been at a race and you needed some ice and you think, I'm not going to take too much because, you know, the cooler's only half full.
Yeah.
I don't want to take someone else's ice, but they reaffirmed today, take as much ice as you want.
Absolutely. It's going to keep you cool, and that's all about staying cool.
Well, let's go. Oh, more about the course. A bit of a change? Is there a change? AJW, you're the course man.
Well, there's a couple of things. First of all, there was a lot of talk about the mud last year and the snow and the high country and decommissioned trail. That stuff's all sorted out. There's actual trail again up there. There's good tread on that trail. The trick is there's a couple of areas where there were some reroutes as a result of all that weather. And as a result of the reroutes, they had to lengthen a few sections. And then, therefore, the trade-off was cutting off some mileage. So there's actually going to be a little bit longer to get to Red Star Ridge, and then you're going to make it up by the time you get to Duncan Canyon. So at the end of the day, it's still 100.2 miles, but a little bit more grinding through the high country than you might have otherwise done in the last couple of years if you'd done this race. All in all, it's going to be no harm, no foul, and everybody knows it all starts after Michigan Bluff and Forest Hill anyway. So it'll be interesting to see how people respond to the high country after a not-so-difficult year 2 years ago and then a really difficult year last year. This is going to be sort of somewhere in between, I think.
They said so hot and not a great snow year, so they're not going to be running through any snow or glissading down any snow slopes this year.
None of that. No, they'll be running on dirt and grass and mud and rocks all day long.
You know, coming up here, I was driving up and I was thinking, you know, I don't think there's another day on the planet that AJW loves more than Western States Day. I mean, all Christmas. Thanksgiving, 4th of July. I think this is your number one weekend ever. Is that true, AGW?
You know, if the way you measure that is a day that you look forward to year-round, and from the moment I drive away on Sunday afternoon, I'm looking forward to the next year. Yeah, I mean, I've been coming here for 18 years. I got to run here 10 times, but it's just permanently on my calendar. I don't know what I would do if I wasn't here. Fortunately, I have a fair bit of stuff to do when I'm here, so that's good.
What is your role this year?
Well, I'm doing a couple of different things. I'm going to do a little race coverage for I Run Far up in the high country. CTS, the company that I work for, and coaching some athletes. We have 16 athletes in the race, so we're doing some support along the course. And then down to the end, I'm going to do some announcing to give Tropical John Mettinger a little break so he can take a nap after the 24-hour finishers come through. So I'll be busy.
Good, good. So let's kick this thing off. Let's start with the men, only because Sally is on her way. So let's start with the men. And you know, when we stepped and sat down here, AJW said, Scott, did you bring your notes? And, of course, Scott and I don't have
notes.
Because we rely on AJW. And I said, where are your notes, AJW? So this is all off the cuff. I mean, this is on his end of his tongue, which is impressive to me. AJW, where are you going to take us?
Well, it's a lot of fun every year, especially when you see the excitement we just had here in the pre-race briefing with all the top athletes called up in front of the room and John's wonderful joke every year that take a good look at them because this is the first time last time you'll see them from the front.
It gets a laugh every year, though.
It gets a laugh every year, just like all 50 states, including Texas, are represented. But I really think that, it begins with Jim Walmsley. Jim's story here over the last couple of years is well documented. He has done an incredible job conducting himself through some misfortune and some challenge. And I've got to say, I mean, it's cliche to say third time's a charm, but I got to say third time's a charm. And I got Jim winning this thing. I don't think in course record pace, but I think he'll win it, and he'll win it in his inimitable style. And there'll be a lot of good chasers, but I think it's his race to win this year.
No, let's just talk just a bit. Third time's a charm. What do you think Jim has learned from the first two races that he brings to this race that gives him that third time's a charm shot?
I think he's learned what I think any good 100-miler learns, and that is that you have to respect the distance. And Jim's a very respectful guy, don't get me wrong, but I think that the first couple of times he came here, he was running it in perhaps a way he might have run a shorter distance race.
Mm-hmm.
And his experience these last couple of years, finishing it but sort of walking it in 2016, and then not finishing it last year because his stomach blew up because he maybe went too hot of a pace in the first half. I think that'll teach anybody, and respect for the distance. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Jim kind of holding his cards close to his vest, maybe all the way through Forest Hill. Doesn't mean he won't be in the lead, but he might not be an hour and a half in the lead. And then I might like to see what he does going down to Cal Street, and certainly what he does from Green Gate to the finish.
Yeah, so we've all seen that great image, or maybe even video of him running in that gate. He just flies down Cal Street, which is a real treat to watch.
Just real quick, for those of you who are not familiar with Western States course, I will link the website, but I'll also put a diagram of the map of the course. So as we're talking about these iconic places along the course, you can follow along in the show notes.
Yeah, well, and
that everybody reads.
If you try to avoid the show notes as much as I do, you can go to Google and probably find that on an image search.
Although, interestingly enough,
you're trying to get people to
notes. I don't think on the map itself, does it just say anywhere on the map? Does it say Cal Street? That's kind of
no, it doesn't.
Yeah, explain where Cal Street is so they're following on the map.
Well, I mean, Cal Street is the trail that begins at the end of California Street in Forest Hill. You know, a real original name, but it's a beautiful, beautiful track of a section of mostly single track trail that takes you from Forest Hill at mile 62 to the river crossing at mile 78. So it's everyone just calls it Cal Street, and it's where dreams are made and nightmares happen too.
my last comment before move from Jim Walmsley is the 14-hour mark. I mean, right now the course record, Timmy Olsen, 14:46?
14:42, but yeah.
14:42, and he has spoken openly about a 14-hour finish. Do you think that he'll have that as a target, or just watch and see if it rolls out and it's close to within his reach? How do you think he's going to approach it this year?
I think he's going to pace himself comfortably. Mm-hmm. If that ends up getting him 14 hours, then so be it. But I think he's just going to pace himself comfortably. He's going to take care of himself in the heat, and then see how things unfold when he gets into the afternoon. But I don't think it's about 14 hours at this point. I think for him, he wants to finish this thing, finish it in style, and along the way get a win.
Good. Let's move on.
Hey, yep. Let's just move on. We just saw Carl Meltzer just walk past. Let's talk about him. What's up with him, AJW?
Well, Carl has been here a couple of times. He had a top 10 finish, but he's never been a person who loves Western States. He likes a lot of other more mountainous stuff. But, you know, he had his mind set. I remember hiking with him on the Appalachian Trail a couple years ago when he was doing his record attempt. And I was getting ready to turn 50, and he just turned 50. And, you know, there's an iconic course record, which is Doug Latimer's 1843 from 1988. It's now a 30-year-old course record. And I think Carl has a real good shot at it. And he's got his eyes squarely on it. And I think there'll be a lot of excitement when you get down about that time of when the clock's running to see if Carl's there, because bringing that record down would be really something.
So if someone's following on the race Saturday and early Sunday, what is that course record?
Was 18 hours and 43 minutes.
Okay.
So what would that be? You need to finish just shortly before midnight.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of individual course records and interesting stories that go along with this. Not only the front runners, but all through the field, from front to back, there's great stories. And there isn't a single runner out there with without their own personal story. I mean, and so that's why we just love this so much. Who's next, AGW?
Can I just make one little comment?
Yeah.
You mentioned all these course records.
Yeah.
And I am constantly amazed. Andy does not have any notes, but yet he knows all of those course records in the in his mind.
You're assuming he's correct.
He's an encyclopedia.
You have
we don't
no
do
idea.
Any we don't do any fact checking on Trail Runner Nation, but at least
or
he seems
editing
or he seems yeah. confident.
I don't. I think if we did fact checking, nobody would listen.
Who's next, AJW?
What is it? Facts get in the way of a good story.
Don't let them get in the way, right? Who's next, AJW?
You got to go with Francois Dehaene, arguably the top mountain runner in the world, three-time winner of UTMB. You know, he was here once, really got nailed by the heat. I think it was 4 years ago. You know, the last year I ran it, finished somewhere in the teens. Then he was here and primed and just had a late scratch injury 2 years ago. So he's had this race in his mind, and he did come back to the United States, you know, just a few weeks after winning UTMB and set the John Muir Trail record, obliterated it actually. So he knows how to run on these smooth, buttery California trails. It's not all about the gnarly European stuff for Francois, but you know, Francois could be this year's Ryan Sands if there's some faltering on the part of Jim or maybe some of the other front fast guys. Francois is going to be there and ready to sweep it up.
That's good. And heat, has he had some experience in heat? Because that really is that puts a bit of difficulty. Some runners that are, you know, have struggles in the heat, they can just melt on you and become a, you know, an eighth place instead of a first place.
You know, I don't know directly what his heat experience is. I know Ryan Sands is pacing him. I know Ryan has been successful in the heat, and I'm sure is giving him some pointers and some advice
sure.
on it. I know Francois did get here to the area, you know, significantly before race day, so he's gotten a little sense of the scene and the heat here. So I imagine he'll be ready for it. He's smart and he's been around a long time. He's not going to come in here, you know, without his eyes wide open for that.
Right on. Good stuff. What's next?
Well, we've got two of our seemingly perennial top teners, Jeff Browning, mm-hmm. who's been third and fourth in the last 2 years, respectively. And Ian Sharman, who's been top 10 an incredible eight times. I mean, if you're filling out a ballot for top 10, you might as well put those two guys' names in there right now. I mean, and Jeff's in his mid-40s. You know, he's no spring chicken, but he's running really well, and I can't imagine he's going to not bring his A game on Saturday. Don't go to sleep on Kyle Piteri either from Colorado, a two-time top tenner and father of a couple of little kids and just a real good downhiller. And I think he's gonna sneak around the top five and really I mean I think those five guys are gonna be in the mix. And then there's a handful of other Europeans. There's some great runners that we're not even going to talk about. But every year there's you know two or three squeak into the top ten you're not expecting. But I think that's the story of the race. That's the fun and excitement of this year.
Let's talk about Jeff Browning's running style and his the way he approaches the race. Such a smart runner, really, really brilliant. Talk about a little bit of AJW about his approach.
You know, when you look at Jim Walmsley and his you know push off the front style and his front runner style, if you want an alter ego to that, you need to look no further than Jeff Browning. I mean, Jeff is a guy as recently as far into the race as Forest Hill and the River Crossing has been outside the top 10 and has reeled people in and finished third and fourth. I mean, if there ever was such a thing as a closer, it's Jeff Browning. And,
right.
And he's, I mean, I think he's pretty much a lock to do it again. The only thing you wonder is if he didn't let so many people get in front of him, you know, if maybe he was in eighth when he started sweeping him in, could he win the thing? But I'm not sure that's his style. And as we've seen, you know, when people have been in the sport for a long time and they get kind of set in how they like to run things, that's the way they're going to run it. And it's inspiring every time he does it. I mean, you see him there, you see him at the chart, and he's like in 16th place, and you're like, we can mail it in right now. He's going to be top five.
Wow. You know, and we listened to on Alex Hutchinson's book, I listened to it, talk about the Kenyan running style of going out and just going as fast as you can from the get, kind of like the Walmsley thing you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then wondering, what would Jeff do if all of a sudden he took off like that, held together, and ran all the way through? Or is it the chase that motivates him?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the chase and the rabbit chasing as he does the hunt that pushes him? You know, who knows what motivates a runner? He's found out what motivates him.
Well, I think the chase probably does motivate him. I also think he really knows what he can do in that first half.
Yeah.
And he sticks to his plan no matter what. And if guys are a half an hour ahead or an hour and a half ahead, that's up to them. They just know that he's going to be back there.
That's
and having that in your head, knowing that Jeff Browning is coming on your heels, it's got to be disconcerting.
Yeah, it's having some confidence in your training and your abilities to let guys go out an hour and a half and know you can reel them in. That's awesome stuff.
That's some confidence.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is.
What do you have next, AJW?
Well, how about the women's side?
Okay, let's go there. Wait, I want to talk about Zach Bitter. He's running this race.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big Zach Bitter fan. One, because he's one heck of a nice guy. And two, I just like his nutrition style and the confidence he has in making that conversion.
He's a smart dude.
And his ability.
Oh, yeah. He's what show did we do with him? Did we do Grit with him? Or we did something. I was like, man, this guy's smart.
Yeah, he is smart.
He's a smart guy.
And he gets out there and promotes and loves helping others learn about nutrition and doesn't push it off on anybody like some people that may push a diet program.
Diet cults.
No, he's I'll provide you the knowledge. This is what I do. Do what you want. He's just a good guy, an ultra runner, an ALTRA ultra runner. Any comments on Zach?
Well, I think that's cool. You know, Zach, of course, almost has no parallel at like the flat track stuff in the United States.
Yeah.
I think he gets that sort of metronomic attitude when he's hitting the track like that. And, you know, to go under 12 hours for 100 miles and do it several times, it's pretty extraordinary. You know, he's had mixed results here. I like to think he's ready. He's going to be fine in the heat. He's going to be fine, you know, with what the course throws at him. I think also he's got a little secret weapon. I just learned today that Jamil Khoury is going to pace him from the River Inn.
Oh.
And Jamil knows the course. Jamil knows how to suffer better than most. And I think he's going to be there to help if Zach is suffering a bit, to kind of get him out of that and get him through it. I see Zach as someone who could be in the second five of the top 10 and scraping up some carnage as the thing rolls down at the end.
Good. I like that. Scraping up carnage.
Yeah.
Nice term. Okay. And the women's side is as exciting as the men's side, maybe more. Who knows?
It's been that way the last couple years, hasn't it? Yeah.
As you listen to the applause on the pre-race meeting, the mandatory, boy, the women had as much applause and as long duration as the men's side. Women and men's racing are equivalent now, I think. They're just exciting as can be.
No doubt about it. And it warmed my heart to see some of the biggest applause for people like Megan Laws, 57 years old.
What's her statistic? She's won her age group?
Every year but one.
And how many years is that?
11.
11 years. Yeah. So 10 years she has won her age group. Yeah. That is sustainable endurance.
What John didn't say also is in her early 50s, she won the overall 50 and over age group.
Overall?
And, yes. And in fact, in 2010, she ran an 18:48 as a 50-year-old. We were talking earlier about Carl Meltzer's pursuit of Latimer's record. She was only 5 minutes behind Doug Latimer, a male, in that record year. Her record for the 50 and over women is 5 minutes slower than Latimer's record for men.
Wow.
So it's extraordinary. The other applause that was so nice to hear was for defending, you know, former champion Casey Lichtai, the Pixie Ninja, and her battle with an injury back in October and through the winter. And she's just such a fan favorite. She's as sweet as they come. She loves this event, really oozes Western States and in much the same way some of the other people around here do. And it's just nice to see that she's endeared herself so much to the people here.
Is she healthy enough to compete?
She absolutely is healthy enough. I think if you were to characterize what the chance Casey has is that she's slightly undertrained. Mm. She's slightly, which as we know, sometimes being slightly under, certainly it's better than being overtrained.
Oh, yeah.
But it could be that she's just getting to that point where she's had, you know, maybe 3.5 months of real training, which I think anybody would say you'd probably want to have a little bit, maybe a month or two more of that. But she's got lots of miles on her legs. She's really, really smart. And she'll make good decisions. She won't get caught up in any sort of fast people early. And she'll finish strong, maybe somewhat Browning like.
Yeah, and she knows the course, and she knows where she can make up time and where she can't make up time. And I want to hit on that a little bit at the end, AJW. You know the course so well. We've talked about a section, and you just ran off some of the go to this turn, and then it goes steep for a quarter of a mile, and then you make a wild down. You know this course. I want to talk about at the end about where you can make up time, where you can go fast, and where you just need to pull back a bit and respect it, because this course will hammer you, fit or not, if you don't make good choices. Let's talk more about the women's side.
Yeah, well, let's hold that, because I think there are some great little points at the end to talk about with the course. You know, Courtney DeWalter has taken the Ultra World by storm in the last 18 months, and has won, as John said just earlier, you know, 8 of the 10 Ultras she's entered, including overall at the Moab 240. I think Courtney DeWalter is going to win this race. If she runs the way she has run for the last 18 months, she's going to win. I don't know if she's going to do that, though. But she probably does, and if she has that in her mind, and she has such a great spirit, such a great attitude, doesn't seem to be fazed by any of this. I'm sure it's the most competitive race she's ever been in terms of the depth of field, and she's just here and having a good time. And I tell you what, I think you could make a point here that she might be the first woman since Pam Smith in 2013 to break into the overall top 10. Ooh. I wouldn't be surprised if she did that.
Oh, yeah.
And especially on a hot day. The years that women break into the overall top 10, 2013, 2006, are the years when it's unusually hot. Because, as you know, women are much smarter, and the guys run stupid, and they drop out. And so I think she's got a good shot at it. I'm not going to say 50-50 shot, but I think she's got a shot at it, and that would be really cool to see.
Yeah, her confidence winning that many races in such a short amount of time, that's got to give her just the mental edge that she needs to just let it loose tomorrow, I think.
And, you know, so many of us who run ultras, we're obsessive. She seems like anti-obsessive. I mean, we had her on the show earlier in the year. I think she knows the course reasonably well. She knows it's going to be hot, but she's not like me and knows every root and rock. And, you know, I think she's taking this as an experience. She's going to learn about the Western States Trail, and it's going to be cool.
When I said hi to her earlier, I asked her if she was nervous, which probably isn't a smart question to ask somebody.
Good at questions anyway. So.
No, she's
not
just
one of your strengths.
Speaking, opening my mouth, but she just looked at me. She goes, "Not really," and I think that's an advantage too.
Oh yeah,
no butterflies, extreme confidence.
Wasted energy, right?
Yeah.
We had a pre-briefing video. And it showed great trail shots. Yeah. Somebody did a great job. I forget.
Oh, yeah. Jamil Coor.
Jamil.
Yeah.
Okay.
From last year's race. Yeah.
So he had some great shots on there. And Courtney was right behind us. And I asked her, "Are you ready for this?" And she goes, "Oh, yeah." I mean, she just saw it. She's just oozing enthusiasm. So that was fun to hear. Who else?
Stephanie Violette. 20, I can't remember which year she won. 2013, 2014. She's in good shape. And I think people are not completely painted. There's a lot of attention on Courtney and Casey and Lucy Bartholomew, 22-year-old from Australia. I think, and by the way, she's got a real good shot at this thing as well. But I think Stephanie could be a little surprised. She knows the course. The heat doesn't bother her a bit. And she's a cagey veteran now.
Yeah.
And I think for both Casey and Stephanie, they're not the kind of people who run with chips on their shoulder, but they didn't have 100% races last year. And I think they're coming into this maybe with nothing to lose, but also, you know, they're still young and fresh and ready to bust one out. So I think you could see some good things from Stephanie.
You mentioned Lucy Bartholomew. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about this 22-year-old phenom.
Well, 22 years old, I think she's only been running. How many years can you have been running ultras if you're only 22? just do the math.
We have some young female runners that are favored to win, right?
Yeah.
AJW, you were running ultras before she even came on this planet.
I was. That's kind of bad. Good for her, bad for me.
And I'm older than you, so I'll take that comment as well. So what do you think about a 22-year-old coming in on her first 100-mile run, taking on some of the toughest competitors on the planet?
You know, I don't know her. And so I'm what I'm saying will just be based on past experience, which is young people who don't know any better either do really amazing or crash and burn. There's not a whole lot of in between. And I mean, I hope for her that she nails it, whatever nails it means to her. But there's every bit as much with a newcomer like that for things to not go right. So hopefully she'll be surrounded by people. She'll have some help if things start to not go right. She's still able to sort of right the ship. But I think it's going to be really exciting. I mean, you got Megan Laws, it's 57 and, you know, won her age group all these times and seems to get top 10 almost automatic. And then a 22-year-old, you know, who's actually several years younger than Megan's daughter. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Eliza LaPierre was up there. She's been out here a number of times and a fantastic runner. It's nice to see her here.
Eliza LaPierre is kind of that person that flies under the radar. She's very humble. She's tough as nails. She has four top five finishes here. Her last time here 2 years ago, she had to drop out. I mean, she spent about an hour at Michigan Bluff, ultimately made it down to the river crossing before calling it a day. But the tougher the conditions, the better. I mean, Eliza LaPierre, and it's not just because she's a Vermonter like Nikki Kimball was, but she's the modern-day Nikki Kimball. The tougher it is, the more hard scrabble it is, the better she's going to do. So a little bit like Browning. Yeah. You know, keep a head on a swivel if you're a woman, because Eliza LaPierre is going to be dancing up the trail, you know, with the last 30 miles.
Very good.
What about Zach Bitter's better half, Nikki Galakaropoulos?
You know, she's come in here and just raced well each time she's come. And she's not one of these people that races a lot of other things, you know.
Yeah.
So she kind of reminds me of Rory Bosio back in the day.
Yeah.
That she just sort of picked her spots. And, you know, I think Nicole runs a lot just observing her. She kind of runs a lot on rhythm. You see she's having a good little stretch, and then all of a sudden she'll pass four people and then maybe have a bad patch and get passed back by three others. I think she's one that, you know, you'll know a lot more about how her day is going to go when she gets to Michigan Bluff, when she's past halfway.
Mm. Let's go back to that term rhythm when we talk about the course and some of the qualities and characteristics of Western States, because I think rhythm fits in that conversation somewhere. If I was smarter, I would know where. And I'm hopefully relying on you to make a correlation or a connection. So who else we got? Do we have any other women that we're thinking about?
Well, I mean, I think that's my group for the win.
Yeah.
There's a lot of international females that should be in the top 10, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about
Lecomte.
Yeah, Emmy Lecomte. She was on our last podcast. What impressed me with her, a great mountain runner. She won Tour de Jeanne, which is a 205-mile run with 90,000 feet of climb and 90,000 feet of descent. She won that in 2014, and she is a tough runner. She is a competitive runner. Very competitive and loves that competition. So I think that's something we can watch.
Has she been? This is her first Western States, right?
Yes.
Lecomte?
Yeah.
I mean, another international runner that may be a good example is Fiona Hayweis, who finished sixth last year. You got to see the course, came over and stayed with Megan Laws for a couple weeks before the race. That was the extent of what she got to know the course. Maybe Lecomte could do something like that and sneak in a top five.
Yeah. And as competitive as she is and being a mountain runner, mountain runners, they get some experience. There's some mountain aspects of this course that
will really
lend well to them. And also some speed components to this course.
Well, and that's really where I think someone, going back to the men's side a little bit, that's where somebody like Francois can take his mountain experience and transfer it.
Yeah.
Did we talk about, I'm not sure I can pronounce her name,
Cecily
Flory?
Yeah.
From Italy?
Italy?
Yeah.
And Mettinger said she'd only been running ultras for 1 year.
Yeah.
I was like, the heck?
It takes that long to qualify for this thing.
Are these people allowed to run this race?
We
check some ID?
last year, she took third at the Tarawera Ultra Marathon. Uh-huh. Coming on.
I think you're going to see. Who knows?
Brilliant comment, Moore.
Okay, I had one note. One note is all I had, and that's it.
And in fairness, if you would have seen Scott's face after he said that, my comment was appropriate. he put a face of...
Oh, man. What, did you look that up on the internet or something?
Yeah, that's the only note I had.
This would fit. It fits somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody listening to this will find that amusing.
She will.
Right. You know, there's a woman story, too. We've talked about Carl and the 50 and over record. Diana Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Is a board member of Western States, four-time finisher, overall winner of the Dipsy race. I mean, the oldest foot race in the country, single Dipsy,
mm-hmm.
that's handicapped by age. You know, she's 60 years old. She's never finished this. She's got four silver buckles, never finished over 24 hours. And Gunhild Swanson's 60 and over course record is like 25, 22. So I think if there's a lock for a course record to go down, that's it.
Hmm.
Let's talk about, and I was not aware of this until the pre-race meeting, we have some contenders, some educated, let's say older people, mm-hmm. that are running this race. And if they end up doing well, they can be the oldest, or finishing, they'll be the oldest record. I mean, the oldest runner to finish the race.
Oh,
we have like five, I think.
There are five. They all happen to be men this year, but there are five guys all over 70.
That's crazy.
Two of whom are 75.
Wow.
The other two are 71, and then Gordy's the kid in the group, and he's 70. Or the other two are 74, and Gordy's the kid in the group at 71.
Wow.
Ian Mattison is one of them, one of the 75-year-olds. He has 15 finishes here, dating back to 1982.
Wow.
If he finishes, it would likely be the longest span, because Gordy's last finish was 2010, the longest span between finishes of the race ever. And not to mention the oldest, because Ray Piva was 71 when he won.
What kind of chance do you give these five?
On a hot day.
It's a tough sell. One thing we did learn new, they're extending the cutoff at Red Star Ridge by half an hour. That helps.
Because it's longer.
It's longer, and also that was they cut 23 people at Red Star last year just because the mud was so horrendous, and so they had to make that decision. But I don't really know. I think there's a whole lot of unknown when it comes to older runners, and but you know, more surprising things have happened here before,
mm-hmm.
And I know these guys have put a whole lot into it. So
and many of those things have been iconic finishes. I think of Grunhild Swanson. Forgive me. Who was the gentleman last year?
Wally Heseltine.
Wally.
Yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
gosh. Those were some of the most memorable. Of course, I forgot the guy's name. One of the most memorable, or some of the most memorable stories of Western States.
And a great age group example, too, probably not for a record, is Scott Mills, who came in, you know, he gets that lean
the Scotty Lean.
Yeah. We got a leaner, but he, you know, he'll be going for finish number 19, dating back to the early 80s. So lots of intriguing stories from the front to the back of the pack going into this race.
We've got a lot of great competitors, both female and male, and stories within those competitors. But one that stands out, the character that stands out the most, is the course.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
it's. It's unlike so many courses. It fools you. It lures you in and invites you in to go a little bit faster, and then just hammers you if you take that invitation.
Yeah, no matter what the dynamic is with the people in this race, the lead character, the title role, is the Western States course.
That's how I wanted it. I wanted to say it just like that, AGW.
Well,
edit your stuff out.
You're right, I didn't. All the words were there. Wrong order.
You know, and one of the things that is amazing, and it's going to play out tomorrow, I think they said that at the start it's going to be 40 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's going to get up into the 103 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a giant, ginormous.
That's 60, almost a 60-degree delta of cold to warm.
Very few courses have that.
Yeah.
That's a very unique thing that Western States keeps under its belt.
Well, and you have to pay attention. Speaking of rhythm of the course, and that it's the title role in this drama. It's the title role in this drama, and it's really in four acts, right? The High Country, the Canyons, Cal Street, and the final 20 miles. And in those four acts, there can be all kinds of sort of sub-drama and sub categories of excitement that I think require a certain amount of understanding. Let's take the high country section. You know, a betting man would say LeCompte and Dehane would do well in there. That's right. Mountain. It's mountain country. It's, you know, going through the pine trees. It's maybe up some steep rocks and so forth.
Some technical,
Some switchbacks. You know, the drama would then shift to the speedsters that can climb, you know, going through the canyons and can take care of themselves and handle the heat. Then it'll come to sort of the smart patient ones when they're going down Cal Street. They're going downhill more or less for 16 miles. You're holding your quads together. You're staying on top of your nutrition. You're, you know, so are you the patient one? And then the savvy, sneaky ones for that last 20, the Brownings, you know, the Charmins, the Megan Laws, the Eliza LaPrieres, they're the ones in those last 20 miles. I mean, let's just say you better make sure you know the color of their headlamps.
how important is it for these runners to know this predominant character, the course? Is there that much of an advantage to grow up, spend a lot of time out there on the course, or can you come in fairly newbie and do well?
I think it depends on your temperament. Mm-hmm. I think Jim Walmsley needed to know the course, needed to have an understanding that it's the leading role in this drama, that it can't be tamed. For example, on the other side, though, I think Courtney is actually benefiting from a little bit of naivete about it. I'm sure people have told her about the course. They've told her about this, that, or the other. I'm sure she's got advice coming from all kinds of different places. But I think a certain amount of naivete is good. And for her personality, for her temperament, it probably makes sense.
That's the way she leaves the door in the morning. She has no idea what she's going to do.
Right.
it's an open book that needs to be written.
Exactly. I might turn this way and go 12 miles, and I might turn this way and go 26.
Exactly.
One of the comments that Courtney made, and I think would benefit all of us, and we probably have exercised it when we're successful, is the effort that I'm putting out now, is it worth the trade-off? If I'm going up a hill and I work harder, is it worth it? Do I gain 2 minutes, but is it worth working 20% harder? Mm-hmm. She understands where the trade-off is for that. If I stay under control on this hill, I'll make it up on the downside. I will not borrow from my future miles just to get 2 minutes ahead on this climb.
Yeah.
Because she's watching maybe somebody else ahead of her saying, I don't want them to get out of my reach, out of my sight, get a turn away from me. She's okay with that. She looks within herself, I believe. She looks within herself and decides, is this worth it? And I think that's just brilliant.
Yeah, and you know, the two-time winner here, Hal Koerner, ran a lot that same way. If the going was going good, he rode it. It was like riding a wave, and maybe that meant he went a little bit faster than he had originally planned or than he did last year or whatever, knowing that eventually something bad was going to happen.
Yeah.
He'd have to pull that back and be like, okay, I'm going to have to get some calories in. I'm going to have to. And that's where the rhythm of the course comes in, you know, the rhythm of those canyons. Down, up, down, up, down, up. Three distinct descents and climbs through the heat of the day. And then, boom, you're out of it. And you got all this running terrain for the last 38 miles if you're smart enough to get there in one piece.
Or you've got slogging terrain where you just kind of death march it in.
Yep.
Either one. They're waiting for you. Either course, the death march or the run successfully in
and like any great star in a drama, the Western States course does not discriminate.
Well, let's talk about that. We talked about potentially 20 top. Well, there will be 20 top 10 finishes, male and female. There's 340 other runners out there that are racing their own race.
Yeah.
What kind of advice would you give those runners, the mid pack? Backpack, some of them that are, most of them are probably running for the first time.
I think most of all, they've got to trust that they deserve to be here.
Uh-huh.
That they've done the training, they've paid all the money to get out here. They are at Western States. It's maybe their one shot. So you have to believe in themselves. You've got to believe that, you know, that every single one of them is going to make it to the finish line. And then you also have to be able to say, but you know it's going to get rough out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get bad. You're going to get, you know, something bad's going to happen. Maybe early, maybe in the middle, maybe late, maybe your feet, your quads, your stomach. But you know that, and you just battle through it. I think then when it gets going really tough and you're in a chair and thinking of cutting off that wristband, you really have to think about the 5-7 years it took you to get here and whether or not you want it to end that way. I think everybody in that room, all 369, does not want the race to end with the cutting of the wristband. Don't make the cutoffs. That might be another story. One of these 70-year-old guys just isn't able to quite get up those hills. No harm, no foul. But, you know, if you're sitting at an aid station and you're an hour ahead of the cutoff and you're feeling miserable, give yourself 40 minutes to collect yourself, eat some potato chips, sip on some ginger ale, wait for the sun to come up. You know, it will get better.
Yeah.
And that track's calling.
You know, as you're talking, it reminds me of this just amazing video clip that Billy Yang edited together. We will have that linked on the show notes. But it's actually a good video to watch for anyone that is the night before a race. Just click on this video. Put it on your favorites on YouTube and watch it, because it will give you a great frame of mind to get you in the frame of mind that you're going to accomplish something great tomorrow.
Yeah, Billy titled it "Before You Run Your Next 100-Mile Race." And I he surprised me with this at last year's pre-race Thursday night event, where they were showing his film Life in a Day. And he took a 5-minute speech that I delivered at a veterans panel in 2016, and then spliced all this incredible video coverage of the race over the past 2 years, including his own race in 2016.
And our own Sally McCrae, who is on her way to this podcast.
And Trayson is in this film. It gives you chills.
It does. It does.
The heat. But we're stalling a bit here, because I know that Sally is walking up some steps. What's the best way to manage this piece, AJW, at Western States? Yes, 65 pounds of ice per runner doesn't do any good unless you use it.
Yeah.
And it's all about not only using the ice, but it's also about measuring your effort, because that's really where it comes down to. Burying yourself early is just not good.
You know, I've thought a lot about it. I think since this is actually a race, I think everybody in one time or another has a sense of urgency about it. I've got to get to this next place. I've got to get to the aid station. I've got to get over this, through this canyon. Having an effective cooling strategy takes time. Let's use the example of the El Dorado Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those guys down there, there's incredible volunteers at El Dorado Creek, and they will walk you down the 5 steps down to fully submerge yourself in that water. Somebody might go through there and be like, you know what, I don't want to bother, you know, going and submerging myself in the water there. I just want to do it and keep going. And taking that time, soaking yourself in the creek, taking the time to get like the full body submerge, is huge. So the best piece of advice is take the time to cool yourself the hell down.
Yeah, yeah.
And speaking of veteran Western States runners, Sally finally made it up the stairs, and she is here joining us live.
Hello, hello. So happy to be here, literally straight from the car. It took me almost 8 hours to get up here, going on 4 hours of sleep.
You know, there's a parking lot up here at Squaw. You didn't have to park in Auburn.
I ran here.
She did every
hour of training counts.
She did her reverse Western States pilgrimage to make it to the podcast here in Squaw.
So that's pretty. We're wrapping up at this point, Sally.
I know. You are. You guys have been talking for a while.
Well, we've been talking like one of the telethons where you're trying to raise money. We just keep talking.
Well, we are good at talking.
We've gone through the men. We've gone through the women. We've talked about the character of the course being. What do you love about Western States, Sally?
I love that it brings people together, and the true spirit of the history of the sport just really shines. I mean, it's at an all-time high, you know, and there's only a couple races around the world where it feels like this. UTMB is another one.
Uh-huh.
Because it brings together so many people from all over the world, from so many different countries. And I think this race is, it's very well respected. And it is, I talk to runners all over the world. It's on their dream list to run here. And I think that when people come, whether they're racing, volunteering, crewing, or pacing, everyone has a really memorable story to share
sure.
and to look back on. So when Western States comes around and people start talking about, like, it's all like these happy, good feelings mm-hmm. that people have. Even yeah. if you're a runner and you have the greatest race, there's so much more about getting to that finish line that you start to realize, like, you know, our sport's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah.
Like, we really care about each other. We love community and we respect each other for what we do. And so I just think that this event, this particular race, does a great job of honoring that.
And I back to a point that Andy was making, and along with what Sally said, this is one of those races. If you are a mid-pack or a backpack runner, you feel like an elite runner at this race because of all of the volunteers.
Oh yeah, you go into Robinson Flat.
All the cheers. You could be the last runner on the course,
yeah.
and you feel like you're an elite runner because of just the camaraderie and the spirit of this race.
Absolutely. AJW and Sally, you'll have to trust Scott and I on that. Yeah. It feels like you're up front when you're in the back.
Whatever, Don. You was it your 2008 race, 2010 race? You had a killer time.
2005.
You placed,
I'm older than
really,
you know.
Really well. Look at how he just scoots past that too. Don, so humble.
But there is something about the kind of rock star status that when you run down that chute into Robinson Flat or you're running down the road into Forest Hill and people are honking your horns.
Yeah.
And certainly when you get to the track, I mean, what other sport is the loudest applause reserved for the last place runner than Western States 100? I mean, you get to the last 10 minutes before the bell tolls at the end of 30 hours. That's electric in that track.
Right.
And it's the most, it's some of the most incredible human drama I've ever seen around that track in that golden hour.
Yeah. And sometimes I think that there may be a little bit of European race culture with Western States, because there are people along the course that the fastest they've run is from their couch to the bathroom, and they don't know really a whole lot about running, but they come out to cheer. It's like I picture in my mind, Sally, you've been there, UTMB, where towns close down. People that have never run in their lives come out and cheer for this race, and I think that takes place here at Western States.
Yeah, most of the races I do around the world, and I tend to race more internationally than I do here in the United States, and people love the sport. And, you know, UTMB is a special one because you can be, you know, at 1 a.m. in the middle of a forest, mm-hmm. and there are people out there, they've made bonfires, they're with their kids, they got cowbells. It's incredible all along the course through the three countries.
That wasn't,
you know?
It wasn't a hallucination, was it?
It wasn't. I have yet to hallucinate. Knock on wood. Might be coming up.
You said there was no wood to knock on. You're
I know,
setting yourself up.
I was like, this is a plastic table.
Well, Sally, I think you put a perfect cap on this discussion of coming in and talking about the culture and what's special about this race.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that what brought me into this sport was volunteering down at the river at mm-hmm. Western States. Uh-huh. And seeing, I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again because I like it. The guy was standing up on a scale when they had it that day, handed his pack to somebody, they grabbed it, and he needed assistance to step up on that bathroom scale, yet he had 22 more miles to go. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him with so much admiration, I thought, wow, I want to be like him.
Yeah.
And I wish I knew who that runner was. I would go back and thank him. I would reach out to find him somehow. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it is, but that moment was a spark that made me fall in love with this sport.
Yeah.
Just
that's
the
great.
Guts.
That's great.
And this would be a perfect time to say, if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, no way, that's the best way mm-hmm. to really experience it. Go volunteer at a local race. Mm-hmm. You can come volunteer here at Western States. If you're from Argentina, volunteer to go to an international race and volunteer. There's something magical about it.
Well, fantastic. We're going to release this today so people can listen to it on before the race or during the race, and then we'll have a follow-up with AJW and whomever we can gather. And Scott, you'll be in Germany. So
I will be on a flight to Germany.
You won't be there. And so we'll do a post-race wrap talking about the heat, talking about some of the predictions, talking about some of the surprises. That
always surprises.
Always surprises.
Someone that was sitting in that auditorium that wasn't invited up to be one of the top 10 or 15 of recognition, and you've been there, Sally, and you've been there, AJW.
Yeah.
And this man was here. Jim Walmsley is passing us now.
And Nico, I know that guy. How you doing, bud? Good to see you.
We'll wrap it at that point. Jim, do you want to say something on this podcast for a second? Wisely walking away.
He's like, nah, I gotta go.
His manager on the corner is like, get off your feet.
Hey, how's it going? Hey, did you cut your hair because it's gonna be so hot tomorrow?
I got a cut last year.
Oh, okay.
I kind of lost a bet, but I promised myself that I'd keep it short for this race at least one time. So, yeah, I got a fresh cut for Western States 2018, and we'll see how it works out.
It looks tight, Jim. It looks tight.
Yeah, appreciate it. It's got a little flair to it in the back, but not too much.
Jim, we're rooting for you, and we look forward to talking to you at the end of the race, because we know you're going to do well.
Can't wait to see you out there, Jim, tomorrow. Have a good sleep tonight.
Thanks. Hey, so if someone, again, can't use Google, and
this is not an insulting statement, by the way.
There goes war again.
It's been that kind of week for me.
Let me Google that for you.
So all you people who can't use Google, you go over there.
Go ahead and just pause.
Right. How does someone that wants to follow this race that hasn't done it before, where do they go to follow the hour to hour, minute by minute? I Run Far does a very good job.
Twitter is so fun to follow.
Yeah, so you've got to go to Twitter and start with I Run Far, also the hashtag WS100, and then there's all kinds of people who'll be adding to that. Also the ultralive.net. Just go to ultralive.net, click on the race menu, and that's where you can see everybody's results. They come in anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes sort of after real time, because a lot of it, especially in the first half, are you know, phoning in on ham radios and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they do a great job, Ted Knutson and his team, to have that ultra live, you know, going literally as live as it can be.
And I'm going to put in a note on that too, because some people get a little ill-mannered on Twitter because things are updated quickly. Mm-hmm. Remember, this is not a road marathon where we have cars that can just zip around the city. They are going through mountains and on trails, and they are moving as quickly as they can. And we have sometimes some reception and technical difficulties because we're in the mountains. So be kind, be grateful, give the people that are covering a shout out, because it's hard work. And trust me, they're not making lots of money doing it. So they're doing it because they love it and they want you guys to be a part of it. So
Andy, what kind of beer should someone be cracking at the start versus the finish?
They shouldn't be cracking any at the start.
I don't know. My teammate Camille might have one in her flask at the start.
Okay, let's say mid morning when it starts getting a little hot.
While they're spectating.
Oh, yeah. Not the runners.
I don't know.
For midday in the heat, I might recommend a nice light Hefeweizen or something like that. And then as the evening goes on and Jim crosses the river and is hammering in, you'll want to go for a good hoppy IPA. I mean, that's what he'd want us to do. And then the next morning, I mean, it might
for
be...
For breakfast? Yeah, is there a breakfast IPA?
A breakfast stout.
Oh, stout.
Yeah, a breakfast stout you might want to have. You could eat it with a spoon.
Would an ultra runner be one that would indulge in a breakfast... Bloody Mary? Would that be appropriate, or is it more beer related?
Maybe some.
There's just not the calories that you need for ultra running in the Bloody Mary.
There's plenty of salt.
Sally, what's your role here? You're here. We didn't address that before we launched this out. What are you doing here?
Yeah, Lucy Bartholomew, my good friend, who she invited me, gave me the opportunity and the gift of being able to crew and pace her. So really excited. She and I have raced around the world together at various races, from China to Australia to France. And she's just incredible. She's a part of a very fast, very strong new group of runners that are coming into the ultra scene, that are doing amazing things and really livening up our sport in new ways. So she's definitely one to watch, and this is going to be her first 100, but she's only 22, but she's been doing ultras for almost 7 years now.
Holy
so
cow.
Her training age is actually older than some women that are older than her, because she's had that experience. And she's very tough and very focused, and her training has been incredible this whole year. So she will definitely be one to watch tomorrow. and she's excited. She's excited and nervous, but I have a lot of faith in her.
What section do you get to pace?
I will be pacing the entire section.
Okay, excellent.
All right.
If I can keep up with her. I'm like, the worst thing will be if she drops me. No, it'll be a good time together. So, you know, running down Forest Hill and crossing that river with her will just be such a privilege.
So what a real asset for her. You have knowledge of the course, right?
Yeah.
But you also have knowledge of her as a runner because you've raced all over with her.
Yeah.
So you're like the perfect match.
Yeah. She's very gritty. She's very, very tough. She's been in some tough situations in races where most people would drop out, and somehow she finds her way out and still places very well. So, and Lucy's had a lot of experience on different terrains. She too races internationally. I think that the pros that are racing in various places around the world are just going to have a little bit more of an advantage because they're used to racing in different climates on different terrain. And I know that she got up to see pretty much every foot of this course, and she feels good about it. So, I think for us to be able to actually run together side by side in this race it's just going to be some really good memories together. And I'm excited to see what she does.
And you're going to push her a little bit.
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah. I'm not a softie when it really comes to anything. So
it'll be fun to follow. Do you know what number she's wearing yet?
11.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, lucky number 11, people, watch out. The
that's
double
a tough
one.
Number. That's
double
a tough
one,
number.
One. Yeah.
AJW, thank you for bringing your catalog of knowledge, your encyclopedia of not only the competitors, but the course itself. You're a valuable resource, and we sure appreciate it.
Thanks so much. And hey, I'm going to load up a van and head up to Robinson Flat right now because I got to get set up I got to post up there overnight.
Nice.
Hey, let's not fail to mention before we cut off that. You know, this is a really tough race to get into. You have to qualify, and then there's a lottery that the percentage of the chance that you have to get in is really, really low. But again, you can come out and you can volunteer at an aid station, as a sweep, as a ham radio operator. You can also volunteer as a pacer. There's tons of runners out there that every year that are looking for someone.
Yeah, down by the river, right?
That is willing to. I mean, you can even drive up. I don't know if they do this still, but you can show up at Forest Hill without any plans and just
follow somebody.
Awesome. No, that doesn't
tell me you're a pacer.
Yeah. So
I don't go creep out on people. I really want to pace you.
You can really enjoy this race without actually racing it.
So go out and race Western States.
Mas.